Welcome to the Human Experience Podcast, where we have folks of all different walks of life share their trials and tribulations, ideas, cerebral chatter, and experiences. We seek to open minds, shed light, and make our modern world feel a little less lonely, realizing that we are all connected, one human experience at a time. I'm your host, Aisha Billy. I would like to thank you for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy. Hi, everybody. I am sitting with the brilliant Joseph Bricker, who is a friend, a poet, a fellow podcaster. Joseph, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Aisha. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I'm more than happy to have you. You had me, and now I get to have you.
That's true. We'll do a little cross promotion at the end here.
Yeah, for sure. Or up front, you have the Cuspers podcast.
Yes. Yeah, I do a podcast called Cuspers. It's Cuspers, a podcast about growing up, where I interview creatives about their childhoods, because I think that's a really interesting part of life. And it is always really fun to see people go back there in their minds a little bit. And so, yeah, Aisha was on an episode. Go check it out. Just look up Cuspers and whatever podcast app you're listening to this on. You'll see a little purple square with like three little cartoony white circle guys. And that's the one.
Yeah. I wanted to tell you this. I still kind of revisit the final exercise that you had me do in the end. Mm-hmm. I found it like profoundly helpful. Essentially at the end of the podcast, Joseph walked me through like bringing little me back to school and packing her lunch and bringing her to the bus stop and asking me like what is something I would say to her. And I just felt connected in the best way to my younger self. And I really want to thank you for that. I didn't get to thank you for that.
Of course. It's my pleasure. It's such a wonderful exercise to do. It is adapted from something a therapist I was seeing had me do. And, you know, I'm not a licensed therapist and we don't do like what she had me do, but it was like, oh, a fun idea to externalize the idea of your younger self and what you would give to them and what you would want to say to them.
Yeah, totally. I was going to tell you that I'm in therapy, which that's not new to me, but I'm doing a form of treatment. It's called EMDR, and it's essentially a form of like trauma treatment where you do bilateral stimulation. So you can mm-hmm. either track like a dot on the screen going back and forth, or you could do tapping, and it's to help reprocess certain things. And a lot of things are from childhood. And she actually would do very similar stuff where she would be like, okay, do you see little you now? Like, do you have that pictured? And I would be like, okay, yeah, like I can see her. And then she would be like, now in this next passes are like probably 5-10 seconds, go up to her as you and see what happens. And it'll be either like older me putting my arm around her or older me, you know, yada, yada. And I thought that school exercise that you did was essentially that. It was like me supporting younger me. So I just thought that was brilliant. Anyway, to kind of get into you, the first time I saw you was at a slam, and you had a poem about white men and kind of posing the idea of like, are we good? And just the way that you were using the play on words. I know what poem, I'm sure you know what poem I'm talking about. The one that you're saying, we good, are we good? The one at the end when
oh, that one. Yeah.
There was one before that too. That wasn't the first one I saw you in, but I found your poetry to be incredibly powerful, and you yourself are, you're a white man, right?
I am, yes. Okay, yeah. I am a white cishet man. I'm about as like, you know, model of the patriarchy as you can get.
Yeah. Where are you from again?
I'm originally from Kansas City, the suburbs of Kansas City, to be more specific.
So would you say that in that environment, it is particularly reflective of that, like of that patriarchal, like I'd imagine in the suburbs of Kansas City, there isn't much challenge around that.
It depends. There certainly can be, but the area I grew up in was very, very predominantly white. I think the next non-white demographic we had was the suburb I grew up in also had a pretty large Indian population. And then also depending on your definition of whiteness, like we also had a pretty large Jewish population as well. But yeah, I mean, far and away, it was just a whole lot of Christian or Christian adjacent white people is who I grew up in. And even growing up, we were aware of it. We called the area we grew up in like the Johnson County bubble, the JoCo bubble, because it was a lot of like middle and upper middle class people. And there was not a whole lot of challenge to status quo and way of thinking. But that being said, there was certainly the self-awareness of like, oh, we are living in a bubble and we recognize that. And so it's weird because even though the status quo is not necessarily being challenged in a super, super aggressive way, or not aggressive, maybe a seemingly super successful way, there is an awareness to it. And I think there is small challenges. It wasn't like, you know, strictly conservative. There was certainly a mix of progressive, liberal, conservative, even like some lefter leaning people. So it was a whole bunch of people all mixed together. But I think maybe out of like the idea that there was so many people mixed together, there was sort of a assumption of politeness that is like, oh, well, we just won't talk about it because there are so many people, so many different kinds of people. Different beliefs all mixed up here.
I find that intriguing that you say that there was like an awareness about it as you guys were growing up, because like I come from arguably a diverse place and it is so keeping up with the Joneses at the same time. Like that's how I feel Long Island is. And I don't obviously keeping up with the Joneses energy is different from like talking about, you know, interracial matters and whiteness and white privilege. But I found that those among me in Long Island were like so not aware that we were all doing this keeping up with the Joneses act. So it's interesting to hear that you felt like you guys did have a level of awareness communally, you know, even though it wasn't maybe talked about as much. You have such deep awareness though. What kind of like propelled you into that?
For sure. What propelled me into awareness
your
and self-awareness?
Your high level of awareness. Like I find you as somebody who is like highly aware of what privilege comes with white cishet man.
Sure.
And like maybe to you it's like, well, duh, because you're in you, but I'm outside of you. And I'm like, what propelled that? I'm like super, it blows me away.
Well, thank you. Thank you for saying that. I cannot really take credit for it, except for the fact that like I practice it. When it comes to like social awareness and political awareness, that is very much learned. I was, you know, I don't want to put myself up on a pedestal. Like every like bad stereotype about like white dudes you know or have heard of, I have at some point in my life, you could have applied it to me. I was very fortunate to, when I went to college, to go to a school that was like, you know, a little bit more diverse, not a whole lot more diverse because it was in Minnesota, so still very, very white. But with people who were more forward thinking and people who had that kind of awareness. And I was very lucky that I had people around me who came to love me and be very patient with me as I learned more about the world outside of myself. So I really have to give credit to the people in my life who helped me walk to that conclusion.
Yeah. It's still a testament towards you though. Like you still were open. I think it's still a testament towards your character because you could have just, I guess it boils down to like the person's, like the goodness of their soul, or I don't know how to put it, because if you didn't give a fuck, it didn't matter who showed you what. You just would have continued in that, in a very comfortable, like, or like privileged position, essentially, you know?
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think I have a hard time with that concept. Not that I disagree with you, but it's challenging to me. I had a similar conversation many, many years ago. I think when I was still in college with some friends. And I was just talking about how, you know, I felt that my mind had changed and I as a person had changed and I would say grown a lot. And another friend of mine was saying, well, yeah, that's because you have an open mind. Like, that's a testament to you, and not everybody is that way. And I think that makes me deeply sad. And I don't know if I fully agree with it, although I certainly understand that a lot of people are very, very stuck in their ways and are maybe more rigid than I am. But, you know, that's why I do poems about white guys. And it's one of those things that not everybody wants to hear it. And that's totally fine. I get it. Like, not everybody wants to give as much time and attention to like the souls of white men as I do. And I fully understand that and have respect for that. But I am somebody who I'm like, okay, well, as a white man, like, I think white men, cishet straight white men, should talk to other cishet straight white men and be like, guys, like, we need to do better. We can't put all the emotional labor on other people. And I want to believe that everybody, absolutely everybody in this world, is capable of changing and growing. And maybe some people that's easier than others. But I think sort of, we were talking off before we started recording about, like, you know, just taking a little extra time to do a little more polish, put a little more work in to, like, elevate our standards. And I'm somebody who I'm like, okay, well, maybe if I can have the patience, if I can really sit with people and understand it takes time, that more people than, you know, we leftists want to maybe think about, more people can come to a place of understanding.
I am so with you on that, and I find that that's, like, a less popular opinion. I was actually telling a friend of mine recently where I was like, no, like, and I stand by this, and I'm sorry if it doesn't sound hot to anybody, but, like, if I have a Republican person who wanted to, or, I mean, put that to the side, if I had somebody who had views different than mine who wanted to go get coffee, I go get coffee with them. I would sit and I would talk with them, because I think that's where it starts, where I can see them more clearly and they can see me more clearly. And I stand by that, and I always have. I think that that is the connector. And being a child of immigrant parents, I understand division, not from necessarily a political place, but, like, a socioeconomic place, where, like, maybe you, not you, but maybe you understand me less because I've had this amount of responsibility from a young age. I had to interpret for my parents. I had to bring them to the doctors and tell them what the doctors were saying. And maybe you didn't because, you know, your parents spoke English well. How could you know any of my experience inherently if, like, there wasn't a discussion about it, if it wasn't shared? And then maybe I paint a picture about you in my head that you get everything easy because your parents speak English, just being really arbitrary. And then you share some experiences with me and I'm like, holy shit. Like, we actually are all struggling, or we actually are all, you know, there are like universal truths that exist among all of us. Point being, that starts at the table with everybody. So I've always felt that way. I don't find it's the most popular opinion, but I will probably stand by that till I die.
I agree. And I do want to say, and I'm sure you agree with this as well, that for me at least, like, I fully understand that there is a lot of privilege that comes from, there's a lot of privilege that informs having that point of view. And that's why, again, I say, like, hey, like, I do not begrudge anybody or hold it against anybody if they're like, I don't have the emotional capacity to deal with X. And so this is to all your listeners. Hey, you can find me on Instagram at joseph.bricker. DM me. I will talk to your uncle. I will talk to your uncle. I have the privilege. I have that armor. It does not, you know, because words are very, very hurtful. And some conversations are hurtful. And that hurt is very real. I don't want to invalidate that. I have the armor of privilege. And so I will talk to your uncle. Let me know.
Let him know, folks. You heard it here. Let him know. So with your poetry, do you find, like, I think of poetry as many things, one being almost like not a weapon, but like a way to like take my power back, or a way to like take my hurt and convert it into yada yada. How do you like, how is poetry soul food for you? How do you use it in like a soul level?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to start off answering this question in a little bit of an indirect way. And that is by repeating something I heard a poet that I respect a lot say one time, which is that there is a difference between a poem and a diary entry. And, you know, everybody's process is their process, and all sharing is great and wonderful and beautiful. And like everybody should have space to do that. But for me personally, I tend to throw away a poem if it feels too much like I am just getting something off my chest. Because that being said, like I'll write the thing, but then I'm like, okay, great. This was cathartic for me, but this is not a very good poem for me. And so when it comes to doing poetry, I find there is a lot of power in being able to take the vulnerability, the rawness, you know, the blood, whatever I'm feeling, and be able to turn that into something else, to be able to turn it into performance, turn it into art. And that is very empowering for me when I feel like not only I am able to speak to something that is very deep within me, but I'm able to take that and make it something. That I have a certain level of, I don't want to say control, but I guess empowering is sort of what I'm circling. It is empowering to be able to take something and not just let it spill out of me, but let it spill out of me intentionally.
It's like directing things into a healthier way. Mm-hmm. Like instead of having, it's essentially taking power back. Like I find that is like kind of the common thread among all of us. Obviously it serves as so many different things, but especially the empowering way. Like when you think of like alchemizing or alchemy, and like, you know, the way people talk about like turning lead to gold, it's similar to that. It's like you took the lead and you changed it to something beautiful. And that's a difference between poetry and a diary entry as well. I love that rule of thumb, by the way. I'm stealing that because I noticed there was like this clear difference between something I would write and I would be like, that's like, looks like it's just venti. And then this being like, wow, this is art. The difference between a poem and a diary entry is essentially like the artistic component of it. Poems are, they're more beautiful, essentially, you know, like, do you get what I'm saying by that? Where a diary is kind of like more raw and like, not necessarily that it's like ugly, but there's a less aesthetic component to a diary entry
for sure
than a poem, you know?
Absolutely. And so, you know, since you're stealing it, I guess let's just go ahead and credit Edwin Bodney. Shout out Edwin Bodney. They're the ones who said that. Yeah. And again, I'm hesitant to go too far down this path because like I do want to empower anybody to write whatever you want to do. So this is like just a me thing. But I will go down this path because I'm the one on the podcast. And so I'll say that to just speak more on the difference. I think this goes to my relationship with performing in general. I am also an actor by trade and background. I went to a classical acting school. I got my BFA. And one thing that I think is so central and so important, but also really hard to internalize, is that performance and art, I believe, is not about you. It's not about the artist. It is not about the performer. It's not about me. And so if I am just doing something that is only cathartic for me, solely cathartic for me, that for me feels very selfish. And I think my goal is always to create something that both feels good to me because my pleasure is important, but also is a gift for the observer as well.
Definitely. Oh, God. Yeah. And I think that's the difference between like a piece that resonates big time with a piece that maybe just like resonates less. I'm processing that. That like kind of froze my brain for a second. Wow.
And there was a 45-minute cut made here as we just sat in silence. The buffering circle appearing across the video chat screen we're on.
Does poetry pull you out of dark places? Do you write it to pull you out of dark places?
No, I guess I will say with an asterisk. And the asterisk is that doing poetry in general, because I'm pretty new at this in a way where I'm like regularly practicing writing and performing poetry. I've only been doing it for like about a year at this point. And about a year ago, I was in a dark place, or rather in a very stagnant place, and just getting started on this journey pulled me out of that place. That being said, I don't just write poems when I am like feeling down and need to like lift myself out of there. It can certainly help, but no, I would say like just writing a poem is not the only thing that like makes me process and move through emotion or move through darkness. I think partially because I think, you know, there's always going to be darkness inside of me. Like I'm never going to fully move through that. But then on the other hand, there are just, I don't know, you need to fill your life with other stuff than just poetry.
Yeah, definitely.
Hot take, poetry is not enough. It's great. It's awesome. But for me, it's not enough.
But it's for any human, it's really not enough. Like I was a dancer, for example, and I remember I heard another dancer who is actually LA based, but I was listening to this back when I was training in New York, and she was like, you guys leave the studio. Dance isn't everything. Like, get out of here. And that's coming from somebody who is basically in a position that all of us were pining to be in. And I thought, duh, like she's completely right. Like travel is a huge part of who I am. If I don't take a trip for X amount of time, whatever that threshold is, it changes depending on where I'm at in life. I start getting tweaky, enjoying really good food. That's a huge part of me. I love like really nice dinners. And if I go a certain threshold without like getting nice dinners, like there's all these different things that make who you are, like being in, among community and other things. So I agree with you, like one thing, it can't be all of it. And I find that obsession, although in America, I do think that we are forced to niche so much. Like, what is your major? It's this. Like, that is a very specific American thing. I realized that when I went to school in Germany, and like my RA was studying sports at the sports school where I was going to school at. And then basically German students can study at two universities. Like they can hybrid two schools together. And he was also studying divinity at another college nearby. And he was getting like, it was like this hybrid like degree that he chose to do. And I thought, holy shit. And he was a rapper. So we would go to like his rap battles at night sometimes. So it was like really blew me away, because back when I would come back to the States, like I was studying fitness development, which is essentially physical therapy undergrad. And it was like, you only did that. Like, you did not write poetry if you were a personal trainer. Like, it was so black and white, and going there fucked my mind sideways. There were students who were in nearing 30 getting their bachelor's, which is more normal now, I feel like, in the States, but it was not when I was studying 8-9 years ago. So I do find that like singularity, like I just completely agree. We as humans, like we contain multitudes, and it can't ever be like a thing. You know what I mean? I guess for some of us it is, but our souls have different areas that it's hungry for. I will say I do tend to write mainly when I am in like a darker space, and I find it like profoundly helpful to process that. So I was curious if like you use poetry as a way to process shit.
Yeah, again, no, I guess not. I guess not really, because I think I need to have already processed it a little bit. I need to have already begun that journey in order to even begin
how
to write.
How funny is that? Like how we just have these different ways of functioning, because for me, I need to already have processed it to talk to someone about it, unless mm-hmm. you're really close to me, because when I'm in the processing stages, it feels vulnerable. But writing a poem isn't vulnerable. So I find that like a super safe space for me to just put the pen to the paper and like fucking get it all out. And then I feel more processed, and then I'm able to like talk about it more. So it's funny that you have to process. You find that you have to process first before you write. It's just so interesting to me, the difference.
Yeah. Well, I certainly have to at least have begun processing. I don't need to be done processing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Are we ever done processing?
Are we?
But I need to have some clarity to even begin putting pen to paper. I wanted to hop back in the conversation a little bit because you talking about filling our lives with stuff sparked a memory in me. This was a conversation that has really, really stuck with me. So when I had just graduated college, a mentor of mine who was, I guess she would be 8 years older than me, we grabbed coffee and we were just chatting about life and stuff going on. And she shared with me, because we went to the same school, she was like, When I graduated, I had a list of goals I wanted to achieve, parts I wanted to play, stages I wanted to act on. And I worked really hard and I was very determined. I was like, these are the things I want to do. These are my goals. These are my dreams. And I accomplished all of those things and I am about to turn 30. Mm. And so now I am trying to figure out what's next. Yeah. And that has always stuck with me because it was just a really great reminder that like your life is happening now. And hey, listeners, your life is happening right now. You are in it currently at the moment. And I think certainly I did. I think many of us in the pandemic in 2020, those of us who were creatives or performers or whatever, when things were shutting down, had to have a conversation with ourselves about like, okay, well, I can't do the thing that has been the focus of my life for, you know, so long. So what does that mean? And I had a conversation with myself that I had been having for years, because when I was a freshman in college, I did not have any tattoos or piercings. I come from a family. We're all inked up. We're all a bunch of punks. And I really wanted tattoos and piercings. But I had sort of internalized the messaging that, oh, you're like a young guy. You need to be a blank slate. To be an actor, you have to be like a blank slate. So you can't put anything permanent on your body. And I internalized that for a long time. And then finally, I had the conversation with myself where I'm like, well, being an actor is just a label. Like that is one thing that I am, but it is not the entirety of me. And at the end of the day, no matter what happens in the world, like I'm always going to be myself. And me as a person, I am somebody who wants tattoos. I feel more like myself if I have tattoos and piercings and can express myself in that way. And so I was like, great, I have to feed me. And if this affects other labels in my life, fine, we'll deal with that. But at the end of the day, I am always me. So flash back forward to 2020 and I'm having to have this conversation. We're like, okay, well, I can't do any acting or performing right now. And so what does that mean for me? Who am I without that label? And it was just a revisitation of that same conversation. And I was like, oh, I am so much. There is so much in my life than this idea of my job or my craft or whatever. At the end of the day, I am always Joseph. And if I accomplish all my goals, if I do all the things I set out to do, that's all great. But I am going to still be in my life. And there is still going to be parts of my soul that need to be filled and fed. So beneath this all, what do I really want? Why do I think I want these things? What are the base needs beneath all of that? Because if this gets taken away from me, if I do the things I want to do, if whatever, I'm still going to have these drives and these parts of me that I need to feed. And so what is that actually? What is beneath all of that? And that was a really important conversation for me to have with myself.
That sounds like a huge turning point for you.
Yeah, for sure.
Like for your soul, for, you know what I mean? Cause I feel like there's us who's like out in the world doing our thing. And then there's like soul us. And like, hopefully we connect those two things, but a lot of the times they're not. And it sounds like soul you and like earthly you connected in that moment, because soul you was like, hey, expressing through tattoos is actually within your purpose. Like when I think of purpose, a part of my purpose is like having flowers in my room and having pretty stuff and like having like little rainbow shits that when the sun hits it, it gets all like fucking pretty in my room. That's within, beauty is within my purpose. I would say like tattoos, I view that as a within purpose as well. I don't think of purpose as like actor or like necessarily job thing. I think of purpose as things that bring us joy. And for a lot of us, it is like those labels also bring joy and all bleeds in together. But my point is that you allowed like the other parts of you to be watered that were clearly dry. And I have so much to fucking say, like that story of like accomplishing everything by 30. When I was in college, I had a professor I was close with. She taught sociology and psychology of sport. She was queer. I felt very safe with her, very seen and heard by her. I didn't have to explain a lot of my experience to her. And she knew I was a dancer. And she sent me this documentary about a ballet prodigy. It was a boy. And he basically got a principal role by the time he was like in his teens. And there's no higher position than that. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, he had like this massive reckoning where he was like, what do I do now? And it was like this huge, the documentary was essentially him having this like massive identity crisis. Like he got the biggest accolade that you can get in that sector at such a young age. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, oh my God. God, like, I don't want that to happen. Like you said something and I was like, yeah, what was it you said? I can't remember in this moment, but my anatomy and physiology professor was also very philosophical. And he said something to me around, I would say this was all within that year. He was like, he's older, right? He's like probably in his 70s, especially by now. He was like, throughout my entire life, everything was sprinkled, the good and the bad. Like all the good stuff, it was sprinkled with spaces in between. And he said, if all of the good things or like the accolades we're working toward, you know what I mean? Like the things were squished and like all happen at once, I would just kill myself. And I was like, I found that so interesting because I was like, there's like this inherent like challenge and struggle that humans need in order to feel like there's something to keep working towards and that our lives are happening now. And even if we're not where we want to be, it's like that's actually a part of the human experience, essentially.
The Human like, Experience podcast.
Plug it in. And it gave me and my young angst this wave of calm where I was like, oh my God, he's right. And that's when it hit me like, your life really is happening now. It's just happening. It's kind of the saying that every day nothing really changes, but in a year everything's different. Or like I've heard parents say in regards to the perspective of parenting, you know, it's really long days, but it's really fast years.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy shit, like just our perception. And that's why it's so important to like slow down sometimes and to take a beat and recognize all the things that you have done because we have done a lot, you know?
Absolutely. It reminds me of a Kurt Vonnegut quote, which of course I like Kurt Vonnegut. I'm a straight white guy. You know it. but he has a quote. He's like, I'm going to butcher the exact quote, but it's like, you know, it's important every now and then to stop for a second and just say to yourself or say aloud, well, if this isn't nice, what is? And that's something that I am trying to practice more. I don't think I'm always very good at slowing down or really taking in the moment. And I truthfully, like, I don't have like a super, super good memory. And I think the reason for that is not being in the moment enough.
Yeah, definitely. That's Gemini moon energy, I just want to say. Y'all are not always remembering shit. I've noticed that with Gemini moons.
We didn't do my big three on air. Do we want to unpack this now?
We can't. So you are a Scorpio sun, Virgo rising. Scorpios have brilliant memories, very much like a Taurus. But I find that memory, like from my experience, I found memory tied more closely to the moon than the sun. Gemini moons, you know, Gemini is like, is the twins. So it's like, I think of them as not fake, as two brains, two kids, two stomachs, you know? And there's a lot of duality. But that being said, think about how much more energy twins are as opposed to like a one child. There's a lot of energy in that moon, and it's so fast. It's air, you know, air is a quick quality. And your moon is your internal experience, which I guess maybe that's why I've seen it be more tied closely to memory, like moon placements. And I find that Gemini moons, it's so like this, you know, I can't really put into words because it's like a vibe for me. That's how it works. But it's like snapping fingers very quickly that tends to happen, that they don't like remember as much because their focus can be like directed so quickly to something else. It's kind of bouncy. And you know what I always recommend for like people with air energy, I'm a Libra rising, a heavy Libra rising, which is air energy. It's very similar to Gemini, actually, to meditate.
For sure. Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Anyway, I wanted to bounce back as well and ask you about, you mentioned stagnancy in your life. How did you like get out of that? So like poetry, you said a year ago you were feeling stagnant. Can you kind of like just take us back there? What was your experience like in that year? I'm sure it was stuff other than poetry that got you out. Well, what did that look like?
Yeah, for sure. I am somebody who has a tendency to settle. I think I'm somebody who desires security. And so I have a tendency to settle. And I noticed about a year ago, a little over a year ago, that my life was being consumed by things I didn't really care about that much because those things were providing security and stability.
Yeah.
However, I was feeling very stuck and I was feeling very creatively unfulfilled. And so I was like, okay, well, I need to do something to shake myself out of this. And so I just Googled. I was like, oh, well, you know, I used to like writing poetry a little bit. And, you know, I have done like some, like one or two times, like shared my poetry publicly in a performance setting. I was like, but it was fun. Like, I really enjoy it. And, you know, every now and then I like seeing those videos come across my feed of people speaking poetry. So I was like, well, let me just look up Poetry Open Mic LA. And shout out to the Poetry Lounge, DPL. They got great SEO. And they're the first ones that popped up when you look up Open Mic Poetry Los Angeles. And I was like, oh, well, this is awesome. This is exactly what I'm looking for. Let me go check it out. And I did. And it was awesome. And I loved it. I think they hold amazing, amazing community space there. And so I started going pretty regularly. Actually, I went once, loved it, and then didn't go back for a while. Just not for any particular reason. I think on one hand, stuff legitimately did keep coming up that was preventing me from going. But then also like I wasn't really prioritizing because I think I was a little bit scared. And yeah. Finally, after a while, I like made myself go back. And then after a couple times, I shared a piece and it was received well and people were very kind to me. And so I was like, oh, well, that feels good. So let me go back. But yes, to redirect my answer to your question about stagnancy, I'm actually going through a moment in my life right now that is very similar. I just quit my job about a month ago, a job that I had been working for 3 years that like, you know, on the surface, perfectly good gig. I was working at a bookstore, but it was not really feeding me. And I had other hangups with this store that made me frustrated or, you know, just unhappy. And I had a moment probably about like February of this year or earlier this year where I was like, you know, I'm not like depths of despair depressed because, you know, I've been lower. I've certainly felt lower in my life. But I am noticing that there was just like a low grade hum of unhappiness all the time. And again, I, you know, had these conversations with myself where I'm like, I'm in my life now. I am currently living my life. And this is no way to live. And so I took stock of all the things in my life. I'm like, okay, well, what do I feel like is missing? like, you know, friendships. No, I feel pretty good about my community and the community I've built. I, you know, love the people in my life. You know, like romantic relationships. I feel okay about that. I feel okay with where I am with that. There's, you know, stuff I need to work through and all of that. But no, I feel okay. It's not bringing me down. My creative stuff. Oh, well, you know, I wish I could spend more time on it. Like, but, you know, I'm not feeling necessarily like a full on lacking, but I wish I could give more to it. My day job, I hate it. I hate going every day. Oh, ping, yeah. There it is. Maybe. Yeah. And so then I was like, okay, well, let's pause. There could be other like mental health issues going on that I'm just blaming on this one thing. And so I, you know, took some more time and really took stock. I was like, no, it's the job. Like the job is what is making me unhappy. Having to show up. I was also like living far away from where I worked. And so I was working full time. Oh, yeah. So like 5 days a week, 11 hours of my day was dedicated to this thing that did not fill me up in any way. And on some days, like really drained me. And I was like, okay, this is how I'm spending most of my waking day. Most of my waking life is being spent on this thing. And I need to change that. And so I did, which was hard. It's not an easy thing for me to do. But you know, I am privileged enough that I have a little bit of savings to cushion me for a while I figure stuff out and figure out exactly what I want to do. But because I know I have a tendency to settle, I actively try to combat that and be like, okay, like so it's good to set roots, but it is not necessarily good to put up with things.
Yes. I was going to say something in regards to astrology, but I'm not going to say it.
You can say it.
No, I mean, that's like Scorpios and are very like committal people and they tend to hang if they come by. And it's hard to like rip them into like basically what I've noticed with Scorpios is that they have to reach, and Tauruses, including myself, they have to reach like a, their threshold of like misery in a way to be like change has to happen, instead of being like, you know, seeing it like a little bit ahead and being like, you know, I think this job isn't working anymore. It has to get to like the point where it's like, oh my God, I can't do this anymore, to rip them away, because they are very like committal. Like they're not flighty. Like that is not a flighty sign at all.
It's a tough thing too, especially when it comes to work, because
yeah.
Oh, I mean, labor is a whole big long conversation, but it's hard massive. Because when you are flighty with your job, or when you don't necessarily commit to your job, whatever your day job is, in a certain way, like you are in some ways screwing over management, screwing over the people who are higher up, who they are typically like the ones at fault who are making things hard. But you are also screwing over your comrades and coworkers, because they're the ones actually doing the job. And I think that's a hard thing for me, because I have worked jobs where people are just like, oh, I just didn't show up, or I called out, or whatever. And it's like, that's great. Like, I support people living their lives, and like your life should not be your job. But like in doing so, you have made my day harder, because I am now the one, I, a lower level employee, am the one who has to now do the job of two people. And so it's tough to both understand, like, you know, I am maybe hurting some people who don't deserve to be hurt in the process of self-liberation, but also at the end of the day, what is best for me is to not make a job my whole life.
Yeah, it's to move on. And it's what you're talking about is loyalty and dependability. Like, you're probably so, like, you probably really value being dependable and being loyal, you know, within boundary, that leaving and causing like that type of ruffling of feathers to your colleagues, that's like probably makes you really uncomfortable or like feel shitty.
Yeah, dependability is what. Huge. I would say dependability and kindness are like the two biggest things for me. And when people are undependable or unkind, that really ruffles my feathers.
Yeah, me too. I like have a really, like, I think I've gotten a lot colder and nastier as I've grown up, where like now if somebody like isn't dependable, but they put themselves in a position in my life where I had to depend on them, like, I'm just like, get the fuck out of my face. Like, I don't have tolerance towards lack of dependability. obvious exceptions exist. I'm talking about, you know, like the just a general inconsistency. And obviously kindness is huge too. You know how you took stock of your life? That's a really clever thing to do. For anybody who's listening, there is like a life pie that we all have of like one slice friends, one slice romantic, one slice work, one slice financial status. And you realize that like your work slice was like not happening. Let's say with your romantic, I feel similarly to like, I'm single, but I'm not bothered by that mm-hmm. like at all. You know what I mean? Like I feel like that area is like still fine. It's more like which area do you actually feel shitty in regards to, and work, we obviously all need it. Benefits are great. Health insurance is great. Dental's great, but it is so time consuming. Like within the week, if you work full time, you are likely working more than like anything else that you are doing. Unless you got the trust fund money from the parents. But that will, like, if you are not happy, that means you're not happy for several hours during your day. Mm-hmm. So it makes perfect sense for that to like bleed in a way where you're like, this has to change. And I'm sure, you know, you'll figure it out. And I'm glad you were clever enough to stock money to have that cushion. I think everybody should work towards an emergency fund. Like first and foremost, like try to save, I say 3 to 4 to even 6, because I'm pretty like money is like a very pain point for me, to save that much of like your nut. So like your rent, like 4 months of rent, 4 months of food, and just keep that on the side so that in the event, if you're ever super miserable, you can leave.
Yeah.
You know, you're not like trapped essentially.
Yeah. Yes, I agree with you. I do also want to hold space for the fact that sometimes that is very much easier said than done. You know, we live in a very, very expensive city, and working, you know, my savings came from like other areas of my life. Like it was not necessarily coming from my job. It was like years of like, oh, other money that would come in, like that is what would be put aside. But like, you know, I was working full time, making more than minimum wage, and was still living paycheck to paycheck and accumulating credit card debt. Like the economy's bad, y'all. I don't know if anybody's aware of this right now, but it's not good for the people right now, which is tough too, because you know that's not something you can therapize away
it's systemic.
When your situation is bad, your mental health is going to suffer. And
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's not necessarily, that doesn't necessarily mean that you need to work on yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I could be really restrictive, and that's what's given me good savings. Like if I needed to really hunker down, like I can be incredibly, like really high levels of restraint on myself, which I guess isn't really a good thing, but it did get my savings where it's at, and that I felt like was a good thing. But I know it's, especially now, it's a really rough time. Like it's like basically a silent Great Depression, because I'm pretty sure that the salaries that we're making now is like in really relatively less than like even the 20s. Mm-hmm. When a regression analysis is performed to compare like money made then to life costs then to money made now to life costs now. And yeah, it is especially difficult in LA. Anyway, we are headed towards the end of the podcast here. Do you have any fun projects that you would like to share or anything else in regards to your podcast or anything?
Wait, yes, Aisha, thanks so much for asking. Of course I do. yeah, you can follow me on social media because I'll post about like everything that's going on in a timely manner. I'm on Instagram at joseph.bricker. That's B as in boy, R-I-C-K-E-R. I'm on TikTok at the same handle at joseph.bricker. Yeah, you check out my podcast, Cuspers. Again, just search it in whatever podcast app you're listening to this on. Go back to the episode with Aisha, because that was a great conversation that we had. And yeah, I always got something I'm working on. So I would say just follow me on social media, because then you'll see what I'm doing.
Okay, cool. And are you mainly, what's your focus right now? Are you mainly acting, writing? Is it both?
Dude, I don't know. I don't know, man. I just like making stuff. I am always trying to make stuff. I have acting projects going on. I have writing projects going on. I'm throwing spaghetti at the wall. That's what I professionally do, is I boil up spaghetti and I toss it at walls.
I love that. I do a lot of that too. Okay, so you're more like you create.
That's what I'm trying to do. I mean, you know, I know that we need to wrap this up, but going back in the conversation, when it came to like conversation with myself, it's like, okay, like, am I an actor? Well, yes and no. Am I a writer? Yes and no. At the end of the day, what matters to me is making stuff. Mm-hmm. And that can take many, many different forms.
Yeah, I agree with you. But I realize like that's really not everyone's thing. Like even as a dancer, like not all like the best dancers I know, they don't choreograph. They just dance. And like dance is like just their thing, you know, where I realize like I dance, but like I want to choreograph. Like I act, mm-hmm. but like I want to write. And I've noticed that that's not always like the case, you know. So I find that a thing. So that's cool. I mean, obviously you create and write, but I guess I wanted to hear it from you confirming it.
Well, here it is. from my mouth to everyone's ears, I am a creator.
Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Of course, Aisha. Thanks so much for having me.
And that's a wrap on today's episode. Thank you for tuning in. Please share, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating if you gain anything at all from today's podcast. And we look forward to having you back next.